Welcome to the Business of Vulnerability. This podcast shares stories of organizations and people helping vulnerable individuals around the world. This podcast is brought to you by PulseForGood.com. Pulse for Good is an automated client feedback system to help organizations gather feedback from the individuals that they serve. For more information, please visit www.pulseforgood.com. Without further ado, the business of vulnerability.
Welcome to the Business of Vulnerability podcast. Today on the podcast, we have Mini Ajay, who is the Business Development Manager for Med Clinical Research. Mini, thanks so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
We are so excited to have you on. And really, we talked briefly before we started this, we've been doing a bunch of these podcasts with people that run clinical research programs. And really because they serve vulnerable groups, people that are experiencing all sorts of different trauma or hardships all over the world. And so it's really interesting to be able to get more perspectives of this. So I'm curious, just to start off, can you tell us a little bit about Med Clinical Research, what you are, what you do, how it works?
Yeah, of course. So started in about 2015, but this has kind of been an idea in the works for quite a bit. Essentially, what we do is we're the middleman between clinical research and pharmaceutical companies. So we really work to bring clinical research to the communities that we serve. We're located in Irvington, New Jersey, which is a predominantly Black community. And really, especially with COVID and everything, really seeing the importance of research and diversity in clinical trials was definitely something that really got this off the ground and running. So what we do is we work with pharmaceutical sponsors to really secure clinical trials that can be based out of our clinic in Irvington. And then we also are responsible for recruiting the patients to the trials and really working with the providers that are based in the community to make sure that we're really facilitating that, that partnership between everybody to make sure that we're getting really getting diversity into clinical trials because it's really important. So,
can you explain why? I think most people understand intuitively why, but can you explain why is diversity important in the clinical trials?
Yeah, of course. I honestly think that at the core of it all is really just making sure that whatever interventions or medications that large companies are funding actually work for the entire population that it's meaning to serve. So we are really focused on securing clinical trials for medications that really are targeted to individuals that are underrepresented in America. So right now we're working on clinical trials for bipolar disorder, autism, schizophrenia, cytomegalovirus, which are all diseases that disproportionately affect minority communities. So at the core of it all is really just making sure that whatever, sponsors are pushing to get funding are also really going to be able to, cater to minority populations.
Awesome. So how does that work, right? So you want to be able to get a diverse clientele to come in and participate. How do you then translate that into actually going out and finding these minority groups to actually participate?
Yeah, so fortunately, sponsors are very aware that, it really can't all be done alone. So we do have support from sponsors. They do come up with depending on the sponsor, they'll have a platform that we can use to reach out to patients that they've already pre-screened. But a lot of it is really community engagement and working with local community partners that already have relationships with our patients. So we've worked with different counseling centers in the past. We've reached out to childcare organizations, schools, really anyone that's embedded in the community to help us also reach out to patients. But we also, go out on the street, especially on days, especially in the springtime when it's nice out, to really talk to community members and really, local supermarkets, grocery stores, things like that. So we really are making sure that we're going out to the community because it's not something that can just be done sitting in an office.
That makes sense. You find that there's any distrust of joining a clinical trial by people that are experiencing any type of these vulnerabilities or in minority groups? Because I think historically that's maybe been an issue and there's probably reasons not to trust. But do you face any of those barriers of trying to get people to trust that it would actually be a good thing for them?
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that we commonly run into. So I think a big part of what we do is make sure that we're educating patients on the importance of the medications that we are trying to recruit them for clinical trials, and also just make sure that we understand where that mistrust is coming from. I think a big part of what makes our clinic so successful is that we have a very diverse team. So, you know, we make sure that the patients that are coming into the clinic know that there are people that look like them, because that's a big trust barrier from time to time. So I think just really doing our part to make sure that we educate patients on the safety of what we're doing, because everything that we do goes through the institutional review board to make sure that, you know, everything that we're doing is safe, and of course for the betterment of the patients that we serve.
That's really cool. So you guys started in 2015, you know, been around almost 10 years. It's crazy that 2015 was 10 years ago. Not quite, but getting close. What's the future hold? How are you guys trying to expand, to do more trials, to be in more communities? What's the end goal here for MedClinical Research?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely expanding. We're, you know, hiring more staff, getting more clinic space. We've branched out into psychiatry studies. We've done allergy studies. So really, we're just trying our best to make sure that we're reaching the populations of New Jersey, minority population specifically, and really just expanding our bandwidth to treat as many patients and find as many, you know, cures to diseases as possible, whether that's medical interventions or otherwise. So, you know, we're always looking to expand and do more really to serve our communities. And sorry, I just wanted to introduce our site manager as well, Tayo Davies, who's here in the background.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
It's nice good. To Thank meet you.
Nice to meet you too, and for jumping on the podcast here.
Oh, absolutely. She had mentioned about the podcast, and I was like, okay, just let me know if there's any little thing I can chip in. I did hear a question about the future of the company. One of our goals actually in the next 5 years is to work more to kind of be a community partner with the client, the sponsors that we work with. A lot of pharmaceutical sponsors do have difficulty recruiting people of color to participate in research. And so that was one of the main goals of having a clinic location, two clinic locations in a diversely populated community. And so at the end of the day, one of the goals is to ensure that we do have that partnership with the pharmaceutical companies, because like she said, like many stated, trust is a very important part of what we do. When patients trust that you truly care about their health and their welfare, they'll work with you. And so we're trying to educate our sponsors on, you know, that link that is missing, and to see how we can be a better resource for them for future studies that, you know, they would consider us for. And we've been pretty successful in recruitment, most of our studies. So it just goes to show for itself what we're doing.
That's awesome. How do you guys pick what studies you're interested in helping out with? Is it kind of the pharmaceutical companies that come to you and say, hey, we've got this study and we need help? Or is it, or do you get to choose kind of the different studies that you're interested in trying to help the pharmaceutical companies out with?
So we have a protocol visibility team. We have different providers that we work with, and based on the patient pool that they have, we have a discussion with them on the patient population that we have in our database, and also the clinical indication that would provide a better outcome for our patients. So one of the things that we learned early on was to focus on research that actually on diseases that affect people of color. So first of all, we don't have enough data in terms of the clinical outcomes for some of the studies, because people of color, you know, don't usually participate in research, not because they really do not want to, but because research centers are not really based in inner cities. If you notice, most research usually happen in teaching hospitals, you know. I mean, we have institutions here, in a in our locality that are having difficulty recruiting people of color, for instance. They've actually reached out to us, even though, like, for instance, within about 5 to 10 miles of where we are, we have UMDMJ, which is a state-recognized and nationally-recognized institution. They have research. We have Robert Wood Medical Center. We have St. Barnabas. We have Beth Israel. So these are big hospitals in the area, and somewhat they do research. But one of the things about doing industry-sponsored research is that if you don't have a great team on ground to help with recruitment, it could be a huge loss for the pharmaceutical company, because they're going to pump all this money to the site. You have the patient base, but people are not enrolling, right? So one of the things is, how do we get them to actually be engaged to participate in research? Access is very important. If a patient cannot access, research are being participated that is of interest to them, they're not going to come, right? So one of the things we learned quickly was, one, we actually have to conduct research that is of interest to the patient, or maybe to a family member or their friends, so they can tell them about it, right? And also see how it is easy for them to access that research site, and also reimburse them for their time. So those three factors have really helped us to grow the patient base that we have. So we do provide transportation services for our clients. You know, we have a company that helps us with home health services. If they can't come to the clinic, you know, we can send them to the homes. We also do research that includes children, right? If you have a child who's having difficulty going to the bathroom once or twice a week, as a parent, you're going to be concerned, right? Would that be something of interest to people of color? Definitely, right? Would bipolar 1 disorder be of interest to people of color? Absolutely. Autism, for instance, we have one in, like, how many kids being diagnosed with autism every day?
So 1 in 36.
Yeah, so it's like 1 in 36. So those kinds of research will actually be something that people of color will be passionate about, because we need clinical data on the outcomes for, you know, people of color. So that's kind of like one of our recruitment strategies as we've grown.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's an amazing thing you guys are doing. I'm curious, how did this come about, right? Like, because it obviously there's a need, and obviously this is something that's important. But I haven't heard of many groups doing what you're doing, and so it's kind of unique. How did this get started?
Well, I actually started as a clinical monitor. I've worked with several of pharmaceutical companies over the years, and one of the things that we've always noticed is we don't have a good representation of people of color, and it's always a problem. And recently, you know, the FDA mandated that if we are going to get drugs and devices approved, we do have to have a good representation of people of color. Also, most especially with what happened with COVID, right? So over the years, the idea has been brewing, you know. So consulting, you know, working with a lot of different sponsors and pharmaceutical companies all over the world, I realized that there was a need, that there was a niche for people of color to be represented. And so that was how we started. You know, we started with Dr. DeSumo, getting the another thing was, you know, providers in communities of people of color are so overburdened with patient base that they don't have the time to participate in research. Right. So, and a lot of new doctors don't even want to work in communities of color either. Right. Because one, you know, most people in community of color, they don't have, you know, the kind of insurance product that they want so that they can get the, you know, the right reimbursement. Right. So it's usually like a state plan or a benefit plan that they have. And most providers really want to be paid properly for the work that they provide, right? So you don't have too many providers working in communities of color. So we had to remove that burden on the providers themselves because of the regulatory component that comes with clinical research. And once you remove that burden and you have a centralized regulatory system to support them, all we needed was just their time to see a patient. And if you can see a patient in your regular practice, you can see a research patient as well. So we were able to collaborate with about six of our providers, making sure that we provide them with that centralized regulatory system that they don't have to worry about that overhead of doing the regulatory work, hiring the staff, you know, and, you know, following up with for payments and all that. So that was a solution that we brought to the table, and they were happy with that. And so we've been able to get a lot more providers to work with us on that, on that platform, and we've been able to scale the business.
That's awesome. I'm curious. We're running kind of out of time here, but I like what you do is needed in far more places than just New Jersey. But I imagine, you know, scaling it up is hard, and you know, building those relationships with providers all over. But there's got to be someone that's listening to this that may be in a similar situation, right? They're running a clinical trial, they work at a hospital, they do something, and they see the lack of representation, and they want to help in some way. What advice would you have for them of ways that they can help? Maybe on the same scale that you do, or in some the same way, but I think everybody can do something, maybe even outside of health. But what advice you may have for people that see those problems and want to try and help it with it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, let's start with the clinical indication that, you know, these clinics are working on, are working with, so to say. So like I stated, you do have to have a clinical indication that will be of interest to the people of color that you want to reach out to, right? Things like sickle cell disease, obesity, heart disease studies, studies that can improve their quality of life. So we can start with that, and you have the providers to support that clinical indication. That would be something that a community of color will be interested in, right? So so first start with your clinical indication, and then look at, you know, do like a SWOT analysis of who could actually potentially benefit from participating in a study like this. And so that would location would then come in into place. Once you identify your location and you have the providers and you have the right clinical indication, then the rest is history. You just have to find provider. You just have to find sponsors that have those clinical trials that you want to represent those sponsors in those locality that you want people to participate in. And then, of course, infrastructure is little or nothing, because if the providers are sold on it, they'll support it, right? So, I mean, I would start that way if that would be something that would be of interest to, you know, another locality or another states or a region that has, a good population of people of color.
So I guess the last question I'll have for you is, if there's someone listening to this that, you know, maybe works for a community or a state or something you mentioned and say, you know, we want to do this, but we don't necessarily want to do this ourselves. We want to do it with you. What's the best way to get in contact with MedClinical Research if they want to reach out about trying to partner in some way, whether they're a provider, a sponsor, or otherwise?
Oh, absolutely. Our information is on our website, and they can text us. They can reach us on Facebook. they can reach us on our URL. The clinic cell mobile number is there. It's open 24/7. We always have a staff who is there to, you know, to pick up requests. So, and, And we have the office line number there as well. So
awesome. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you guys so much for appearing on the podcast, and thank you for the work that you're doing. It's a really important thing and something that is noticeably missing through clinical research. And absolutely. So, you know, I hope that that you don't stop at New Jersey and keep working your way out, because there are plenty around New Jersey. There's plenty of places you could go, but throughout the country, I think there's a lot of work you could do to help.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We love what we do.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Vulnerability. In the midst of the pandemic in the year 2020, it was hard to imagine that we'd be able to start a podcast that talked about the courage and compassion of those serving vulnerable individuals and have it be something that people are willing to listen to, not just once, but multiple times. More than 50 episodes later, we're still sharing these stories and the abundant goodness that is in this world. We're grateful for our listeners, for those that have appeared on the podcast, and for those that will appear in the future. The business of vulnerability is important because it's not an individual's or even an organization's business. It's the business of all of us to help those who are vulnerable be able to overcome whatever problems they are having. And I encourage you to take time today to think about who you can help and who you can uplift and support. Whether that is somebody down the street that's experiencing homelessness, whether that's the refugee in your neighborhood, whether that's a family member. Whoever it is, your hands, your thoughts, your actions, your words can help them through this difficult time. For more wonderful episodes, more awesome insights, more examples of courage, compassion, and understanding, please visit www.pulseforgood.com and check out our blog and the podcast, or easily view other episodes of this podcast on iTunes or Spotify or however else you get your podcasts. Thank you again for listening to The Business of Vulnerability.